Glacier Bank's totally free checking saves you both time and money. Visit your nearest Glacier Bank office today. There's a convenient location near you. Glacier Bank, member FDIC and an equal housing lender. And today we're really excited to have Glacier National Park Superintendent Jeff Mao with us. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Yeah. Glad you're with us today, coming all the way down from Glacier Park. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
You've been at the park now as superintendent, what, about 2-3 years?
Actually, it's this will be my fifth summer coming up.
Is that right? Yep, wow, time flies when you're having fun, huh?
Sure, yeah. Certainly does.
What are your impressions of the park?
Well, I'd say one of the first things I really notice is just how connected the local communities are to Glacier National Park. I think Northwest Montana loves Glacier National Park. Montana loves Glacier National Park. And as we're discovering, a whole lot of visitors from around the world are coming to Glacier National Park. So, but really, it's that community connection that I really enjoy. I think people just, so many people are here because of Glacier National Park. And I've never worked anywhere where I felt that level of connectivity to the national park before.
Well, now you've been doing this for a few weeks, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been a little over 30 years now working for the National Park Service.
Where all have you been?
Well, much of my career was actually in Alaska, so almost 23 years, all over the state, worked in small Eskimo villages to larger communities on the coast. I did some time as a superintendent in Colorado, Florissant Fossil Beds, and I did a two-year stint in Washington, D.C., where it was kind of a congressional fellowship opportunity. Wow. So
you've you brought the whole thing and all that experience here to Glacier Park.
Yeah, it's been great.
There's certainly a kinship between Alaska and Montana. I know a lot of people that have go back and forth either up there to work or vacation and vice versa. Move down here when they can no longer stand the cold winters up there.
Yeah, the winters tend to be a little bit longer there, but believe it or not, though quite honestly, there are days when I think I'm on the perhaps in St. Mary or Two Medicine, where it almost feels like Alaska again.
I'll bet. Why is Glacier Park involved with other partners? Like, for example, Climate Smart Glacier Country.
Well, you know, again, I think it's that sort of connection to the community. As Glacier National Park, we're very focused on recycling, sustainability, ways that we can sort of reduce our energy uses. And really, we're running up against the point where we can't progress much further unless we're working with partners and partners in communities. There's some great examples that actually come out of Alaska where communities, counties got together and sort of looked at how do they solve the recycling problems. And it's actually the railroad stepped forward to help when they were able to accumulate enough numbers to make it economical to move a volume of recycling to Anchorage that could be put on barges and sent south. So I think it's that sort of teaming up. If we pool our resources together, what can we accomplish?
Okay, now when you're talking about recycling, what kind of things?
Well, I think it applies to plastic and glass and paper, just the whole sort of gamut of recycled scrap metal, light bulbs, you know, all those things that we just don't want to be putting straight into the landfill if we don't have to. So certainly now with the situation in China, there's, you know, and the market's not there for recycling, it's causing some problems, but still, we think that working with organizations like Climate Smart and the Glacier National Park Conservancy and helping support our sustainability efforts and working as a partnership with communities, we're going to be able to accomplish many more of our goals than we would on our own.
Climate change, that's a reality. Whether what we decide where it's coming from, the fact of the matter is it's here. And the glaciers in Glacier Park are diminishing.
Absolutely. It's Glacier National Park is being impacted by climate change. I mean, it is, we're seeing it in those longer, hotter summers. And, you know, in some years like this, we may be seeing it by, you know, colder, heavier snows in the wintertime. And so it's really interesting because we're seeing this juxtaposition of some extremes. I often describe it, it's like somebody's turned the volume up on the weather. So if it's going to be cold, it's going to be really cold. If it's going to be hot, it's going to be really hot. So, Yeah, you know, I can remember, I think it was not too long ago, you know, we had a November 2016. It was a record warm, dry November. We had record visitation in the park. And then we were followed by a record cold, snowy December, which meant Whitefish Mountain could open up. I mean, it's just that sort of juxtaposition of these extremes that we're seeing. And I think this spring is no different in the sense of we've got a whole lot of snow in the park that's got to melt. Mm-hmm. Before summer gets here, and we're running out of time.
Yeah.
Now, you know, one of the things that I've always loved is ranger-led tours in the park. We took a snowshoe tour just down in the Apgar area. Mm-hmm. You know, and Apgar is kind of like for locals. You know, Apgar is like it's not a big deal.
Yeah,
I was amazed at the nature mm-hmm. in the middle of the winter. And I was also amazed at the ranger who was able to point out some things that I never even imagined existed in our park.
Yep. We have some incredibly talented staff, very committed, some who have been there, decades, and really committed to working with visitors and helping them really see what there is to see, hidden in nature, because there's a lot to offer if you look hard enough or, you know, you look behind the scenes a little bit. You'll see quite a bit. And I'm really fortunate to have such a cadre of dedicated employees that, you know, so excited to share with the public.
And understanding how things, the ecosystem works, and I have only a tacit understanding of it. But I was fascinated by all the little animals in the winter mm-hmm. that were frolicking around, and I never would have seen them. I never would have noticed them if they hadn't been pointed out to me. And now I can't miss them.
Right. Right. I mean, in some places in the world, actually, my experience in Alaska, it's really interesting because winter is really when the local people can really travel the country and see what's out there and hunt and even ice fish. But summer can be kind of tough because of the boggy conditions up there and people are sort of confined to their villages. And so it's really interesting. And winter is a great time for you see so much evidence of wildlife. You're seeing the tracks. You're seeing what's the evidence of the snow of what they do, which you often miss in the summer.
Yeah, how many toes, how many
right.
forward and back and everything. It's mm-hmm. Well, you know, Glacier Park has just become an incredibly incredibly popular place, but that has created some issues for us, and we're going to talk with Park Superintendent Jeff Mao about that after this. Our guest is Glacier National Park Superintendent Jeff Mao, now in his fifth year as superintendent of the park.
It seems like you're the new guy. You just arrived, but it's been that long.
One of the challenges you inherited is the fact that our park has become so popular. Millions of people come every year, and it's getting to be a problem.
Yeah, the numbers are definitely something that we have to wrestle with. I often look at it as our staffing really hasn't changed. The number of employees that we'll have on this summer is about the same as we had in 2005. And if you look how our visitation changed, it's probably gone almost 70 or 80% increase in visitation.
You know, I used to always escape the crowds by going up to Bowman Lake and Kintla Lake. Can't do that anymore.
Yep, that's right. You know, it's last summer we actually had over 1 million visitors in just the month of July, which was more than Yellowstone, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
And in fact, we were one of the first national parks to actually have over 1 million visitors in 1 month. I can tell you that Yellowstone's never been there, Grand Canyon's never been there, Yosemite's never been there. So we've really hit a mark. And You know, it's kind of interesting to try to figure out why that is. I think it's a whole mix of issues. But I think, you know, people's interest in seeing the parks and seeing the glaciers is very, very high. And the challenges for us is we're also seeing who's coming is changing, too, because we're hearing reports from our concessioners and our staff that we're seeing a lot of people this is their first national park. You know, they're so inspired by social media, and Glacier plays well on social media, which is with the scenery that we have, and that's what's really drawing people. And we're seeing it in our ranger responses is the calls for assistance have gone up probably double of what our visitation does. So there are stresses that come with that high level of visitation.
Well, we have one long road that goes all the way through the park from one side to the other, and that's where most everybody goes.
Yep. No, it is. It's stunning. You know, there's no question about it. And that's easily where 98% of our visitors go. Many don't venture very far off the road. But, you know, it's a stunning ability to see the alpine. And that's what, you know, Glacier is really known for, is that access to the alpine environment there.
But how are we going to deal with that? Because sometimes the Going to the Sun Road turns into a very, very long parking lot.
It can. And certainly we're doing what we can to set visitor expectations, you know, and letting them know that, you know, it will be congested, that they may have difficulty finding parking, and trying to help them adjust their schedules a little bit so that their expectations aren't that, you know, at noon at Logan Pass, they can have the whole place to themselves. Because that won't be the case.
Yeah. Now, that is never the case.
It has the shuttle service so that people don't have to park. Is that relieve some of that?
Well, our shuttle service is pretty limited and was really set up to help alleviate some of the stress associated with the long construction rehabilitation of the road of the alpine section. So it really serves a tiny fraction of the numbers that go over the Going to the Sun Road, but it definitely does help. And as we look forward, that's one of the things that we hope is to look at working with partners to be able to maybe have not so many people bring their cars up, that if we can bring them to a shuttle system, that if we can move them up using public transportation from Kalispell, Whitefish, Columbia Falls, we won't have so many cars in the park, because that's really the crunch in many places is just the parking.
Now, I had family last year, and we parked down at Apgar, but we used the Eagle Transit service up to the top, and it was very enjoyable. But we did that because we had kind of a warning of congestion.
Right. You know, there are certain times of the day where the majority of people who try to park at Logan Pass won't be able to find a parking spot. So they will have to go to someplace else and maybe come back later in the day, or one person will drop folks off and go on to someplace else. So there's a number of things that are happening up there. Logan Pass, we last year for the first time, we found that the parking lot was actually full at 8:30 in the morning. And that's pretty remarkable. And it turns out most of those cars weren't moving. And it was because a lot of people were going up there to park and go for a hike and then come back later in the day. And we know that sort of deprives some of the folks who just want to stop, take a picture, use the bathroom. So we're working with timed parking this year to at least have some a significant number of slots for people who are just driving through and want the quick
photo. For me, the shuttle system works for that, because you can do a through hike.
Yep.
You can go in on one trailhead and come out at another location, and you don't have to worry about getting back to because you can't park your car in two different places. This is I think for hikers the shuttle system is just a godsend.
It works great for that, for sure.
What are we going to do about parking? We've only got so much land area in Glacier Park that we can inhabit.
Right. And we've done a number of studies working with the University of Montana, and they show that we could increase the parking lot 50% at Logan Pass. If we could, or if we wanted to have that impact, but it would only give us maybe 5 more minutes of parking, you know, in terms of before it fills up.
Five more minutes?
Really, the numbers are pretty staggering that drive through. So we're looking at, you know, how we can diversify the opportunity, working with partners here in the valley, you know, letting people know. Because I really like to think of Glacier as the tip of the iceberg. There's, Glacier is just 1 million acres in this 33 million acre area we call the crown of the continent that extends all the way to Banff, all the way to Missoula. And there's just a whole lot of places for people to see authentic communities, authentic cultures, and, you know, some great public lands. So, yeah, we're working, particularly on the east side. You know, I think there's some opportunities there on the Blackfeet Reservation where many of our visitors can't tell when they're in the park or when they're on the reservation. They're just having a national park experience.
You know, I was born and raised here, and I spent a lot of time in the park, but it always seems like it was on the western side. And just a couple of years ago, we discovered Two Medicine. And what an incredible discovery that was.
Yes. Two Medicine's, mm-hmm. I find Two Medicine is... I like to describe it as one of the more intimate. It has a more intimate feel in the park as a valley goes, and there's terrific hiking there and scenery, and mm-hmm. people love it.
Now, as far as the increase in tourism, you know, the numbers ramping up, what do we attribute that? You know, there's been this term "last chance tourism." Is it because people want to see the glaciers before they're gone? And it's interesting because I read a comment of one of the early park superintendents who said that it was the process that the park was created from. They never had the expectation that the glaciers would last forever.
That's true. I mean, you know, the glaciers have been melting for quite a long time. And so, you know, it's just whether or not, you know, are they being accelerated at all by what we're seeing from climate change now? But I think that idea of last chance tourism and social media together have really sort of accelerated the interest in coming to a place like Glacier. You know, there's other things behind the tourism increase that we're seeing. I think, you know, traditionally Glacier is greatly impacted by exchange rates because of our Canadian visitors from the north, as well as gas prices also greatly influence how visitation comes to Glacier.
Boy, great conversation with Park Superintendent Jeff Mao. And Roger, Robin's going to ask you about more about climate change and what you guys are doing about it right after this.
Well, our guest this morning is Glacier National Park Superintendent Jeff Mao. One of your predecessors, Mick Holm, is a friend of mine. He lives up between Columbia Falls and the east side of Kalispell now. And I guess he decided to settle down here after doing the park circuit. I don't know what your plans are, but what are some of the ways that you guys are contributing or... What are you doing to stop climate change? You know, I don't know how
to can't
put
stop
thing
it, Robin.
Yeah, well, I know.
Well, you're right. We really can't stop it. That's just something that's beyond our control. But how we respond to it, I think, is important. And so, you know, it's we look at climate change. We call it climate change response. You know, how is it changing the way that we manage our wildlife, or how is it that we're changing the way we work with, you know, some of our species that are being impacted by these longer, hotter summers or increased fire. Whitebark pine's a great example of that. You know, it's a high alpine species. It's really subject to a rust that impacts it and its growth. And also, you know, the change of animals that are used to disperse the seeds of that species. And so that's an example, I think, of where we're taking measures actively to help propagate white bark pine in the park to make it resilient to climate change over the long term. Because we know a lot of these species will survive and can adapt to changes. We can look back in the fossil record and see bull trout's another example of where you can go back in the fossil record and bull trout survived in much warmer, hotter conditions than we see today. It's just their ability to adapt to that change takes time. How do we help them by that time? And bull trout, you know, you try to make their habitat more resilient, get rid of some of the invasive species like lake trout from impacting them. So that's what we do sort of on the wildlife side.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really interesting because I've worked around climate change for a long time. I was quite active during the Bush administration on the measures they were taking to respond to climate change. One of the things that I've come to learn is how do you make your organization flexible and adaptable in the face of climate change? So, you know, as we have seen last year, we had a month of July with over a million visitors to an August where we were just going into a fire season and some of the worst smoke that people have in memories impacting them and our visitors. And so I've really sort of spent a lot of time trying to work with my staff so that they can be more adaptable and flexible and resilient in the face of, you know, these sort of extremes that we see juxtaposed from one month to the other. So, you know, I think how we respond to that climate change comes in a whole number of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we have to adapt. It is what it is. So you don't have a solution for a global warming, I guess, or whatever. You know, and it's funny because on the one hand, you hear about global warming and then you have a winter like we just went through. So I guess it's cyclical. You know, one thing feeds the other.
Well, it's also sort of how it averages out across the globe. And I've heard that this winter, there's some incredible temperatures along the equator in Pakistan, India, you know, that they had some incredibly record temperatures. But I think in these sort of interior northern latitude places like Northwest Montana, we're just going to see an increased variability, you know, snowier, colder winters juxtaposed right next to hotter, drier, longer summers and everything that comes with it, whether it's fires or drought or floods or all of that.
What are your observations here for this particular summer? What are you've got to, you know, after last summer and the fire season we had, what are you thinking? Are we going to be looking at something like that again?
You know, and I think I've sort of given up on trying to forecast. I just want, you know, my staff to be prepared, mentally prepared, and you know, to the extent possible, you know, to respond to whatever we see. I think if we have a quiet, warm, dry summer, we're going to see a lot of visitors. But certainly, you know, there are some forecasts out there that could be a more active fire season in Montana. What does that mean? We don't know. I don't think anybody anticipated just how active the fire season was last year.
Well, of course not. And the where it hit.
Yep.
Where it hit. That surprised everybody because that's not an area that normally gets hit.
Right, right. So, in some of our Sprague fire, for example, when it was burning down towards Lake McDonald Lodge, those cedar hemlock forests, some of those, they haven't burned in over 1,000 years. It's just mm-hmm. not an ecosystem that burns very often. So,
one other quick question, and that would be the lodge. How involved are you going to be in the development of that lodge?
Well, you're talking about rebuilding the Sperry Chalet.
Right, Sperry Chalet.
That the dormitory burned. And just as a reminder that there are, you know, four other structures that did survive there. And we've done some public meetings this spring talking about, you know, what's important about, you know, when we look at rebuilding the Sperry Chalet, what's important? It's that visitor experience. And so much of that mm-hmm. visitor experience is not just with the dormitory, but also the dining hall as well. So as we move forward, we're really convinced, and we've heard loud and clear from the community and from across the country that they would like us to retain that Sperry Chalet visitor experience. And you know, it's in our planning documents that this is not something we do all over the park. This is the one place in Glacier National Park where we offer that kind of experience. And so we're pretty committed, as is the Secretary of Interior, is quite committed to, you know, looking at how we can bring that experience back sooner rather than later.
Are we through the environmental impact stage on this yet?
We are just, I think yesterday is when final comments were due on the draft environmental assessment. And so hopefully we'll see a finding of no significant impact signed sometime in the near future. And then we'll move on to see what we'll undertake for this summer, which will really be focused on stabilization that might help us get ahead in the rebuilding process.
I would imagine we're going to use helicopters to get up and out of there. We're not going to use pack mules, are we?
We're going to use quite a few pack trains, but yes, helicopters are definitely going to be probably at least the majority of how All we right. get materials up there.
Yeah.
But I can tell you there are some people who are genuinely excited to be a part of that reconstruction of the Sperry Chalet. Mm-hmm. So
most of us weren't around when it was originally built.
Yeah. So
and they used local timber then, didn't they?
Yep, they used local timber and local stone. So luckily we won't have to quarry much stone, we don't think, anyway. We won't know until we get into it. But it'll be quite a project, and it'll keep us busy for probably the next few years.
What a delightful conversation. Jeff Mao, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
And you're Appreciate always welcome.
Here. All right. Thank you.
Park Superintendent Jeff Mao. Glacier Bank's Community Conversations, a service of Glacier Bank where your checking is totally free. Just about anywhere you are in Northwest Montana, you'll find a Glacier Bank office nearby.